grow up with the NES, PlayStation, Star Wars, cartoons, and 80s TV. Do you like to think who would win in a fight between Batman and the Master Chief? Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks. Comics, games, movies, music, and TV. They're gonna tell you everything you need. Superheroes or not, they got your back. They're gonna save the world of geeks.
Hey there, geeks, geekettes, and cousinettes. Welcome to This Week in Geek. I'm Steve Snowball Sailor, and I have another interview for you guys. And this is another part of the YouTube creator series, as I like to call it here on Twig. So, but first, before I introduce this amazing YouTuber, I had, without realizing it, I had a bit of a history with following this person for quite a while, apparently, on YouTube. For those who, I know I mentioned it before many times, but I used to work at G4 Tech TV's Call for Help as an intern there. And there was a guest co-host of Callie Lewis. And Callie Lewis is from the TV or the web-based show all about gadgets and internet stuff. It's called GeekBeat.tv. And it used to be called Geek Brief TV. If you actually remember way back in 2007, we did an interview with Callie and her former husband, Neil, at the time. And she's amazingly awesome. Now, around that time, she was talking about a story about this really cool contest called The Best Job in the World. And I was intrigued because the whole thing of this contest is you apply to be a blogger on this secluded on this paradise island for I think it was like 6 months or at least a year, something like that. And you get to anybody in the world could apply. That's the greatest thing. And so I looked it up. I was very interested because I know Callie applied for it. But I also wanted to see if there was anybody locally to me that applied. And sure enough, there was somebody from Toronto that applied for this thing. And he did this something that was very unique that I enjoyed so much because of the background that I have. And he did a little bit of a musical to apply for this job. And he had such lines as, it works perfectly with my biology degree. We'll get into that in a second. So without even realizing, I subscribed to this YouTube channel, had a few sort of YouTube song covers on there, which I immediately fell in love with the music. And he became a really good musician. I followed him apparently on the Apprentice A, Corey Vidal's daily vlogs. He worked with them, and then he came out with the Zelda, the musical. Then he came out with his biggest hit to date is his YouTube channel called ASAP Science. And I'm introducing to you the biology musical major, curator of ASAP Science, Mitchell Moffitt. How you doing, sir?
Good. How's it going?
Doing excellent. So, yeah, that is the story of how I had met you. Now, before we get into all that, because I go through a very James Lipton inside the actor's studio with these interviews. So okay. If we get any Oprah tears, that's okay. Don't worry about it. We have Kleenex somewhere in this studio. So first off, where did you grow up?
Grew up mostly in Guelph, Ontario, is where my family's from now. Had kind of jumped around. We were in Eden Mills, which is like an even smaller town of like hundreds of people. So I grew up in a small town. But then for most of my young life, I lived in Guelph. Mm-hmm. And then went through high school there and then actually went to university in Guelph as well.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, it's a nice little town. I'm kind of a small city boy. Now I've been in the city. I've been in Toronto. I've had best of both worlds. But Guelph is always sort of near and dear to my heart for sure.
That's awesome. I've only driven through Guelph, sadly enough. I grew up in the St. Catharines region, so I understand sort of the small town a little bit mentality. Mm-hmm. I even lived in a very small town for like 2 years. We won't get into that. It's very, very, very difficult for a blind man to get around town. But so now, were your parents what do your parents do?
My dad's, well, for most of his life, he was actually a pilot, and he had his own flying school out in Waterloo and in Guelph as well. And then my mom's just done a various bunch of jobs, as well as, you know, been my mother and caretaker of, you know, four kids and now two foster kids and three pets and stuff through our life. So we've had a pretty busy, wild family life, but it's always been very good.
So what prevented you from being a house care pilot?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess as a kid, you kind of always, you know, when I was really young, it was awesome. We got to like go up in the planes for our birthdays and bring our friends and stuff like that. So I loved it as a kid. But then I think as I got older, you kind of want to do your own thing, right? And you mm-hmm. find your own passions, and it's the things that you weren't exposed to that suddenly you realize like, oh, that's cool. Like, I haven't had any experience with that. I want to go try that. And so for me, I think I just got inspired by some like certain teachers through high school and even university that kind of, you know, ended up nudging me in a certain direction in my life.
So did you already have a plan in mind, like when you were a kid, like I want to be this, or did that constantly change?
I think for a long period of my life, it was I want to be a vet, which was like fairly consistent. And then, you know, things like music and art and acting and stuff were always kind of involved in my life. But my sort of aspiration for a long time was to be a vet. And I went to the University of Guelph with that in mind and actually applied to the animal biology with hopes of getting into the vet college there. And then after second year of university, I just realized maybe I had, you know, apprentices at some different vet offices and stuff and liked it. But I was like, I don't know if this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I still love the biology aspect, but maybe you would like to open that up to kind of learning about everything in science as opposed to just, you know, the animal internals and how to heal an animal. So so then I kind of shifted into like a more general biological science degree from there.
Okay. So what was it that of biology that sort of fascinated you the most? Was it the animal sort of biology of it, or was it just you just loved science that much?
Yeah, I think when I was younger, it was that I just loved animals. And I think a lot of people who go to be a vet, they have some affinity. They have animals. I've had cats and dogs growing up, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But then as time went on, I think I got lucky, like I said earlier, with a couple of the high school teachers I had that sort of really sparked my interest in like biology and chemistry and physics versus some of my other classes that maybe didn't catch my attention the same way. And then that just sort of made me realize like I loved learning about all this stuff in the world. I loved learning about everything around us, not just animals, but animals as well. Mm-hmm. And then once I got into university and got to take even cooler classes, I started to realize like there's so much out there you can learn about even your everyday life and just getting into the specifics of physiology and you know, genetics and stuff. And it's like mind-blowing all the time when you're learning it.
So it was basically a very easy jump to just normal biology and everything else, like even surrounding human biology too.
Yeah, because I mean, especially in high school, you're not really studying animal biology, and then even in first year university, it's all pretty general in a nice way that they give you exposure to everything. And that's sort of when I realized like there's so much more for me than just animals that I would love to study. So I just wanted to be able to make that choice of taking things like, you know, like physics or like human disease and stuff like that was outside of the realm of animals.
Okay, so when you graduated college, what was your sort of first like, okay, now I'm out in the real world?
What do I do now? I think everyone and all of us with that degree too, and everyone in science, everyone out of university these days is like, what the heck do we do now? For most of my university career and just following after, I was working in labs and like through the summers and sometimes through the year and stuff. So I had some experience in labs and it was enjoyable, but I knew it wasn't what I wanted to do also for the rest of my life.
Right.
And then as you mentioned, that best job in the world competition came up in my third year of university. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of applied on a whim, and I'd always been involved in like music and musicals at the university and, you know, semi-professional level and stuff like that. So I just threw that together, and then that kind of threw my life on a curve. And, you know, it kind of became a big thing. And even though I didn't win the competition, then Tourism Victoria, which is the competing state in Australia. So the competition was held by Tourism Queensland. And then so I didn't win, but Tourism Victoria contacted me and said, hey, since they didn't choose you, why don't you come work for us instead?
Oh, really?
Yes. So
you did? You actually went out to Australia?
Yeah. So in my last year of university, I was actually still in school when it happened. Mm-hmm. I managed to do an exchange abroad in Australia while working with Tourism Australia and doing some sort of promotional tourism stuff down there in like Melbourne, and then was going to school up in Townsville, which is like the exact opposite side of the country. So my last year of university was there. And then so that kind of shot my life on this sort of like, I kind of got thrown into the travel industry.
Uh-huh.
And so after university, then someone had seen that video in the travel industry at a company called Contiki Holidays and then reached out to me and said, hey, do you want to come and work for Contiki Holidays?
Wow.
So it's like, it goes to show what the internet can do, eh?
You have like now three different career paths, which is amazing. Like, I try to balance like at least some my hobbies with like writing and making online content and stuff like that. But geez, wow. Now you skipped over a very important thing I wanted to get to because I love talking to anybody that is within the arts. And you definitely have that sort of musical, Broadway sort of mentality. And I'm still pretty interested in all the travel stuff you did, but we'll get into that in a second.
Okay.
So how did that, when you were creating the video for Best Job in the World, I assumed you made it all from scratch, correct?
Yeah. And I mean, I had some, like as a young kid, I'd always been interested in film and production and music. And so for me, I, you know, through my life had, you know, played with a lot of cameras and was working with a production studio and stuff. So, you know, had equipment there and sort of just put it together that I could write music and record it at the studio and then use the equipment and sort of throw that into a package for the competition.
Have you ever written like a musical before?
Not a musical. No, I've written a lot of music and just like stuff for fun and my own sort of music, which is not like musical theater. Mm-hmm. But I've been in a lot of musical theater productions, like, you know, just within Guelph and around. And when I was actually in grade school, I was in a production of Oliver Twist in Toronto, which is like launched me into musical theater. So that love for musical theater was always there. And when I was thinking about how to, like, my friend had brought The Best Job in the World to my attention. I hadn't heard of it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, whoa, that's really awesome. You get like $250,000 in the 6 months on this island.
Yeah.
And that sounds wicked. And I was like, what is the most ridiculous thing I could do to get the attention, right? Because everyone, there was 50,000 people who submitted auditions or something like that.
Yep.
And so I was like, you have 1 minute. What the heck can you do that is going to grab their attention? And I was like, obviously a musical will do that. So.
Totally. Because I remember that video back in that time, it was hard to be able to get a video on YouTube viral and then make it be successful. And that one I remember seeing very early on in the competition, and I just kept going back to it and seeing the sort of the views just keep climbing and climbing, and it was amazing to see. So when you submitted that, and so you said the best job in the world, they obviously went with someone else. And how far did you get in the competition?
I was the second most voted person in the competition.
Wow.
And then from there, they picked like a top 10. And then, so that was as far as I would have made it. And then from there, they like selected the winner, who was a guy from the UK.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't based on votes then.
No, the votes like guaranteed you to get to the next level.
Right.
And then after that, then they decided. You know, they kind of picked one person from every country all over the world strategically. So they could get as much PR as possible. and then from there, they just had picked someone who, you know, had skills in writing or who they thought would best represent like what they were looking for.
Right. So did they send you out to Australia during that competition? Or
No, I didn't. Some of the very, very finalists got to go
for
like the final interviews and stuff. But I was shafted, unfortunately.
Oh.
But that's when, Tourism Victoria calls up and they're like, hey, don't worry about it. Why don't you come down anyway?
So how soon was it when you found out you didn't make it to when Tourism Victoria called you?
Probably literally weeks, because in Australia and in Canada and in many countries of the world, it was like a pretty big competition. It was pretty front page news. And so I think Tourism Victoria had been following this massively successful online viral campaign. And you're right, like you said, this is kind of before the time of like massively viral videos on YouTube, right? It's still kind of like an up and coming medium. And so they knew about it, and I think they knew exactly when it was done. And so they just kind of contacted me right after that.
So what you said you went on exchange program. So what did you have to do for Tourism Victoria? Just basically be their ambassador kind of thing?
Yeah, sort of. And we actually did like another musical version with them as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So there's three musical versions of this. When I didn't get in the competition, I made a second one.
I was going to mention that one. That one was pretty good.
About losing. Like just as a joke, like you didn't pick me, but like I'm going to make a musical about it anyway.
I loved how epic it was too. It's like you just bring it like, okay, anybody, just come on in this video.
I went to the like local schools and was like, do you want to be in a musical? Like, bring all your students. And we got like 100 people to come into it or something. But so that like caught some attention. And then they were like, let's do something like that for Tourism Victoria. And mm-hmm. and then so I came down there and we got to sort of, I was blogging about it and kind of writing it up and some similar to what would have happened in Queensland, not quite right. as like over the top and no like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? Not quite this like island to myself, but it was still amazing.
That's awesome. So how, you said you spent a year there?
It was 6 months.
Six months.
Probably like 7 months that I was in Australia. Yeah.
Okay. And then when you moved back to Canada, where you're like, just, okay, now what do I do? It's like, oh yeah, I got a biology degree. Might as well try to do some of that.
Yeah, that's when I was like, okay, well, I guess I get a job back at like the labs that I've been working at and trying to figure out what the heck do you do with this degree now. And
yeah.
I think everyone's kind of in that same position when they finish school. And and then lucky I got a call one day from someone saying, hey, I saw a video of you on the internet. And
that's always a scary call to take.
Yeah, I know. It's like, okay. And they're like, we'd love to sit down with you. We're from Kentucky Hall. And we were a travel company for youth, mm-hmm. and we'd like to see if there's a possibility to work together.
Are you still an employee at Contiki?
No, so about a year ago, I left Contiki and got into YouTube.
Right.
So because of Contiki then, they actually started working with some Canadian YouTubers mm-hmm. In order to just do some promotional stuff, and I had literally never... Like, I had exposure on this YouTube world before, but it has changed drastically in, like, the last years, right?
Right.
And so I didn't really understand that there was, this, like, this culture and community on YouTube. And so Corey Vidal was brought in by Contiki to do some stuff with them. Mm-hmm. And that's how I was first introduced to him and the Apprentice A crew. And I was like, what? Like, you can make money off the YouTube and, like, you can make videos for a living? Like, that sounds really fun. I want to do that.
That's awesome.
And so I just reached out to them and was like, you know, I have a background in, like, video production. And mm-hmm. like music and engineering and stuff like that. Music engineering, not engineering.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And so it was just like, maybe like there's a chance for us to maybe work on some stuff together. And he was like, hey, do you want to come and live with us and work with us full time?
Yeah, that's I was going to say, because that must have been a very interesting call to have, because it's like, hey, you want to come live with us? And it's because I remember seeing you on the Apprentice A vlogs when you showed up, and then all of a sudden it's like, now you're living in the house. And I'm like, I was always kind of interested. I'm like, how did, like, what was the jump from, I'm like, okay, you know what, like, I'm going to work with Apprentice A, and then I'm like, okay, you know what, now I'm just going to live with them. What was
right.
it? How did, like, Corey approach that with you?
I think, like, we had a chance to, like, hang out and get to know each other,
right.
and I had been visiting the house a couple of times at least. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, ultimately, I was just ready to, like, switch it up in my life, which, you know, seems to happen every couple of years. I'm like, you know, let's try something new and challenging and just get out there and see what happens. And so I was like, might as well go full force into this. If you guys are willing to have me, I can spend all my time there and we can just go right into it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we made sure, like, our personalities clicked and that, like, I got along with people in the house. But
yeah.
Beyond that, I've kind of always been of the mindset that you just kind of go for things, no regrets, you know, just give it all. And if it doesn't work, like, whatever. And,
mm-hmm.
you move on to something new. But that's kind of why I just, you know, had no reservations to just get up and move my life.
Yeah, that would have been even a scary notion for me. Now, how old were you when they asked you to join the house?
That would have been last year, so 23.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I can barely remember what the hell I did in 23. Man, I feel old. Jeez. So when you worked at the Apprentice A house, you had sort of two projects that you did. You had your own YouTube channel, Mitchell Moffitt, and you released your album through that way. Were you already working on your own sort of EP at that point, and then you just sort of like, you know what, I'll just put those up on YouTube as well? Or
yeah, so like the music stuff and the production stuff, that's always kind of been like a creative urge in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so even sort of before I left Contiki, I was starting to, you know, I'm being like, I really want to do more music. I just want to start recording my own stuff. And so that was all kind of peaking. And then when I met Corey, I was like, this is such a cool opportunity to get mm-hmm. more involved with that side of me that I've kind of neglected for the past year and a half or 2 years or so.
Right.
And
for
so,
reasons, though. For
yeah, no.
Reasons.
And it was like never regretting.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
just being like, you know, I hadn't really written any music or done any productions or anything. And so that's why... that was kind of peaking within me, and I was starting those things on my own. And so I came to the Apprentice A house having already sort of recorded my EP, but then, mm-hmm. you know, being exposed to that YouTube culture and, you know, having Corey and the others kind of be like, yo, make a YouTube channel and just see what happens. And it started out, you know, myself trying to figure out, okay, I'll be on the production end mostly, and I'll put some things on YouTube and make my YouTube channel. And everyone gets obsessed over, like, you know, what do I do on my channel? Like, how often am I posting? And so at first it just started casual with me. And I didn't know that I wanted to be like a musician on YouTube, because I didn't know if I wanted to be like doing covers or if I would have to write a new song every week, and like what capacity I had to do that. And then slowly kind of I was thinking about, what can I do on YouTube and what kind of stuff do I actually like that will resonate with people? And that's sort of where ASAP Science began to blossom.
Okay, yeah. Now let's jump into that, because I definitely do want to talk about Zelda the Musical in just
okay,
a little
yes,
bit.
Yeah.
ASAP Science. Now you definitely sort of made the huge jump from musicals to your science background. And so what was the spark idea for, like, hey, you know what, I can do this kind of like whiteboard sort of science facts on YouTube?
Well, so my partner and I, Greg, that do the videos together, both of us went to university together and got the same degree, and he has a teaching degree. And so we had always just loved telling our friends the coolest aspects of science and like the things we were learning in school, and then running and being like, did you guys know this? And like, let us explain it to you, because we just learned it and it's so awesome and now we're going to tell you. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of embedded in us. And then he went on to be a teacher. And so he obviously has the instinct to want to teach people.
Okay.
And then, you know, as YouTube was kind of evolving and people were creating, you know, weekly content or, you know, monthly content and whatnot, and people were subscribing and that sort of culture and community was building up, I started following a couple other YouTubers and had seen some of this sort of white style stop motion video, like from channels like RSA Animate or Minute Physics or a couple others that, you know, I found like super effective for learning for myself, and just saw it as like a great medium to, you know, not have to worry too much about putting myself in a video, but it really kind of came down to the essence of what the video was if you did it that way.
Right.
And so I just liked that aspect. The aesthetic of it was nice. It kind of engages your mind while you're learning, and you don't have to stare like at a head necessarily the whole time. Mm-hmm. Not that that's a bad thing, but it's just like a medium that when I watch videos like that, it really worked for me.
Totally.
So I decided, like, let's just try that and see where it goes, and what kind of ideas can we come up for science topics, and is this a real thing?
Yeah, I remember watching you sort of develop the idea in the vlogs. It was you basically just had a camera looking down at a whiteboard and lighting, and just you just sort of stop motion animating it. I was immediately drawn to that, because I'm a science idiot. I failed chemistry so many times. I actually, the first test that I ever blanked on anything was a physics test. It was science was never my. I always had an interest in it. Because, I mean, I grew up with, like shows like Bill Nye, the Science Guy, and Beekman's World, and all that kind of stuff. And I loved it, but I just couldn't get it. I just couldn't wrap my brain around it. But what I loved about ASAP Science is that you take really interesting concepts and add, like, a whole sort of you bring it down to, like, kind of the basic level. It's, like, okay, so that anybody can understand while still providing the information. So, like, you do topics like what came first, the chicken or the egg, or just amazing facts that will blow your mind. Like, stuff like that. I'm like, wow, I had no idea about any of this stuff, and yet I got it. It was amazing. So, now, growing, how long did it take for ASAP Science to kind of become sort of like just a project that you want to do to, okay, you know what, I want to do this sort of full time?
Well, just to touch on the point that you brought up there, that, like, kind of our focus is that there are so many people out there that actually do like science but maybe don't realize they do, or thought it was too hard or didn't do well in school, and so they didn't get exposed to that. And so, yeah, like, it's the most fun part for us is to bring that to someone, right, who thinks, like, oh, I don't like science. And then you're like, actually, you're already experiencing this. Like, you drink and you want to know what happens to your brain when you're drunk, or maybe you are interested in lucid dreaming. You know what I mean? Like, these aspects of science that can appeal to anyone, which is the coolest part about science for us, and that, you know, it's not about, even though the Higgs boson is really interesting, that's not necessarily like applying to someone's life. And so for us, it was like, how can we find a way to really get into someone's life so they can realize that learning about it is actually fun and cool and very, very interesting. In terms of, like, where we started and how we knew it was becoming a thing, it was totally a pet project at first, just kind of like, hey, let's put this out there. You know, we're going to get, like, 5 views here, and, you know, 4 of those are from my mom at first. And then it just kind of developed slowly. We just had a plan of sort of ideas, and because I had been at the Apprentice A house, I got some exposure into, okay, at least, you know, have a schedule so when people come, they know they can come back next week and expect a new episode. And so kind of had a rundown on best practices and, you know, maybe a slight advantage there for starting right away and kind of having a solid plan of how I wanted to sort of build it. But honestly, never, ever could have really predicted what would have happened and never would have known, you know, 6 months later that it would be my full-time job.
That's amazing.
And so, yeah, it just sort of like took off. And then there was a point where it was like, this is now consuming most of my time. And so I kind of need to focus on this because, you know, you want to take advantage of the momentum and you want to like really be able to focus yourself on it. And so that's when I just kind of made the decision like this is too crazy to, you know, let kind of slide
that's
away
awesome.
And I want to keep doing this.
So like, that's amazing. Within 6 months, it became, wow. That actually encourages me the most because, I mean, I've been on YouTube since 2005. November 2005, but I'd never figured out what to do with it. I've always had one channel. Like I was very lucky to be able to get the YouTube channel, youtube.com/snowball, because that's been my nickname for years. And then so I figured, I'll keep that channel. And then I've always wanted to do something with it, and I've rebooted it several times. And hearing a story like that of just sort of taking something that you're passionate about and just adding a new little spin on it and creative spin on it, because it was amazingly creative. And hearing that, it's like, within 6 months, you're able to sort of turn that into a full-time job. That is as absolutely amazing. So I congratulate you, sir, on that.
Thank you. Yeah.
So now what was the video that sort of, like, was there a video that kind of blew up, or was it just gradually over time you just started getting more and more views?
A bit of both. So it was sort of gradually, and we would sort of share it with different, you know, science blogs and, you know, Tumblrs and stuff like that, just to kind of get it out there and see if people would share it. Mm-hmm. And then slowly more and more people who we weren't sort of giving it to were sharing it as well. And every now and then you get like a big video, right? So one of the first ones that did really well for us was, well, there's two of them. One was the scientific hangover cure, was like one of our first big ones. And then scientific power of naps. And so obviously people care about sleeping and people care about drinking. but yeah, so it was like this gradual movement, but then those kind of like shifted it to be like, you know, we were like, oh my, like the first time I like opened my email and there's like thousands of emails from new subscribers, I'm like, what is happening? Like my heart starts racing. I think something's broken or something's going wrong. And like, it's a pretty crazy feeling when that happens and you can't really predict it. I think every video kind of has like a potential and usually I have an idea like, okay, the scientific hangover cure, you know, that's kind of kitschy and quirky and going to bring people in, but you never know who's really going to share it and if it's going to go out and who's going to see it. And so when it does happen, it is like this exciting, like, oh my gosh, like it's going, I can see tons of people watching it. And it's like, it's a pretty fun little few days when that happens.
Well, that's the thing, because I kind of get a little bit annoyed at sometimes when I see people, it just happened. I had no idea it was going to be a problem. Like, yeah, you kind of did to a certain degree. So I like that you said, because that's the thing. It's like, when making like a video like that, you had some degree that it was like, yeah, you know what, this has potential to be big.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say like if for you or anyone who's on YouTube, it is like not just getting lucky at all. And like we did our work of like trying to share our stuff and we kind of built the show based off of things that could apply to people. You know what I mean? Like there was elements in there that give it those advantages to get out there and spread. And so yes, there are things on YouTube that just go completely organically viral.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say two things. It's both easier and harder nowadays to get a viral video. It's easier because more and more people are watching and will share, and more people are in this environment who aren't necessarily YouTubers, but they're on Facebook and they'll share it, and they're on Twitter and they'll share it. And so videos can go viral like way faster, and that's why someone like Psy can get, you know, a billion views. And that could never have happened like 2 years ago.
Exactly.
But it's also harder because there's also millions more people trying to do this, right?
Yeah.
If that's something you want to do, like going in with like a real plan and kind of thinking it from an audience perspective. And I know it's kind of I don't know how to describe this. Like there's a point of contention where you're like, okay, how far do I go to let my content be dictated by what I think people will want, right? Versus what we actually should make and what we want to make. And there's that fine line of, you know, we're in the business of educating and entertaining people and you want to try and get their attention. And so it's that mix of how do we keep the educational stuff but also bring in the entertainment piece for them.
Okay.
So yeah, you can kind of gauge like which videos are going to be more have more viral potential. But having said that, one that I don't think has as much could just as easily go viral. It's just it is partially due to the circumstance of, you know, one, if someone with a million subscribers shares your video or a million Twitter followers or whatever, you're going to get significantly more traffic, right? So it does come down to luck sometimes, but there is always that sort of embedded stickiness of a video, right? I guess.
Well, yeah, because that's the thing with any creator. They want to create something that is that they're passionate about and that they want to be able to create. But yeah, that's the thing with when you have a large audience on YouTube, I can only assume that it's like when you see more, like you get more into the demographics and the analytics and be like, okay, these videos do really well or these types of videos do really well. And then you sort of tackle it from that aspect. Like how, what's the percentage of like stuff that you, like videos you do want to put out and then videos it's like, okay, you know what, this will work with the audience, but it's still something fun to do.
Yeah, it's a mix. So when we first started, it was just completely our ideas of, you know, what we learned in school or the things we thought were cool. But the great thing about being social and being online is that people can suggest what they want and they can also, you know, encourage other people's ideas. So on YouTube, you can like thumbs up other people's ideas if you like them. So we can get a cool sense or a good sense of, you know, everyone keeps asking this question and everyone keeps thumbs upping this question on YouTube and Facebook and on Twitter.
Yeah.
Obviously, we should answer that. You know, if people are so curious about something like Deja Vu, we haven't done that video yet, but literally every video we do, we get like 50 people asking that.
I never even thought about that. Yeah, I guess there would be a science for Deja Vu.
Yeah, so it's like everyone's curious about that. And just because we didn't think of doing that originally doesn't mean that it's less important, right? And
right.
And yeah, sort of our mandate and what we really want to do is find those ways to relate to people's lives. And if they can give us clues into what they actually want to learn about, then that's great too. But there's another side of it of, you know, we have the biological science background. There's probably things they don't even know they don't know that we can tell them as well. Right.
Yeah.
So keeping both ends of it, sometimes there's videos that people have specifically asked and sometimes it's us sort of putting together an idea.
Yeah. Well, that's one thing I do like about the videos is that always at the end you ask if you have a question you want answered, leave in the comments. And it's sort of it's great because it like kind of caters to you get to sort of get creative ideas that you never thought you would have, like Deja Vu. I mean, again, I'm like now I'm actually like, okay, now when is the Deja Vu video going to come out? Now I'm interested. so with that in mind, I mean, you sort of you took that into sort of in Canada we have this or we have funds that are created for art projects and for film and for online creative sort of projects. And you applied for the CFC or the Canadian Film Canadian Film Center Idea Boost. So what if you can kind of describe what is the Idea Boost?
Yeah, so it was kind of like a government funded program run by the Canadian Film Center, titled Idea Boost, and it was just a chance for sort of new startup projects in the digital space to kind of it's like an incubator or accelerator program. So you could apply for it, and the whole idea is they would kind of help bring in mentors and funding and to kind of get you started and maybe give you some guidance on where to go. And, you know, for us specifically, we're science background and have no real business background. And, you know, if we could make this a sustainable business that we could work at and, you know, put our full attention into, that would be amazing. So for us, we decided to apply to this Idea Boost program and got into that. And yeah, ultimately, they've just provided us with a slew of sort of experts in different entertainment fields. And, you know, it's just been a lot to think about that they give you, right? And obviously, we come from a different environment that is YouTube and it's new and no one really knows like the business model behind YouTube. And that's not, you know, from our perspective, it's not the number one priority, but it's really interesting to think about, you know, how do you build a sustainable business around this in like a healthy way? And I guess all artists kind of struggle with this, right? Like how do you keep the integrity of the art but also make a living off of it so you can actually keep putting more time into it and make it better and better,
right?
So that's kind of what Idea Boost facilitates is, you know, here's some cushion funding for you as well, and here's these people, and hopefully we can give you an experience that gets you there faster than you would have on your own.
So now what was sort of the pitch that you had made to Idea Boost? Like, okay, this is what I'd like to be able to do. Was it just sort of expanding just what ASAP Science currently was?
Yeah, we kind of came in, like most of the projects, well, many of them anyway, were sort of, here's our pitch. We haven't started yet, but like we would love to make this, you know, app or this game or show or something. But ours kind of had already started. So our basic premise was, you know, we don't have that background, but we have something going here. We've got traction, we've got an audience, and we love doing this, but maybe there's a lot more to think about that we're not already thinking about. So it would be great to have people who are in these fields, who are in entertainment, who, you know what I mean, to kind of help us on this journey of, you know, momentum, and like as the audience explodes like exponentially, like what the heck do we do, how do we manage it, and like is there sort of best practices and strategies in the real world that would apply to a YouTube channel?
Okay. And thankfully enough, you did get chosen as one of the projects to be funded, which is amazing. So what has been the process like for you, like what experience have they sort of had, or what was sort of the training and the teaching that they've had to go through for this?
Yeah, well, we're still in the program and it ends at the end of March, so just like less than a month away.
Wow. Okay.
But yeah, I guess they've kind of, there's a lot of different sort of business models and business workshops and stuff you can go through to kind of, you know, make sure you are giving your audience what they want, or understand who your audience is and what it means to understand like what their demographic is and how that should affect the way you're creating content, and should it at all is the question. And so just going through these different workshops and testing assumptions, you know, we think this is a great idea, but before you go and, you know, put all this money into this idea, you know, you should test your assumptions. And there's kind of different practices you can do before. And I mean, our project's a little different because it's a YouTube show, but, you know, thinking of like a traditional product, you don't want to spend $100,000 building a product just to realize, oh, people don't want it this way. They actually wanted it this way. Mm-hmm. And so learning, like going the back end and figuring out all these things before you go down the line and spending money and that kind of thing has been kind of the angle that they've been teaching through this project.
Okay.
And now obviously for us it's a bit different because we're like an entertainment property or an entertainment show on the internet. But all that stuff still applies, and just sort of thinking long term, okay, what happens with ASAP Science? Can it be more than a YouTube channel? Can it be a brand associated with science, and what does that mean? We've been talking to some different literary agencies and publishers. Can we make it a book? Can we make it a TV show? Like, where does it go? And just kind of trying to manage those ideas and figuring out, you know, what is at the essence of ASAP Science, and how do we basically manage all these opportunities that could come to us? Which ones should we prioritize, and where do they go?
Okay, so now before Idea Boost, did you already sort of had an idea in mind that you'd like to be able to get some more funding to be able to expand the ASAP Science further?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to be honest, it's exploded so fast that like thinking back to when Idea Boost started, it was like it was still really, really exciting and it was happening what felt fast then, but now it's happening like tenfold the fastness that it happened then. And so for us, it was like thinking, you know, maybe there is an opportunity in this and like some experience we can get to make this go faster and be better and all that kind of stuff. And like little did we know, like 3 months after starting that or 4 months after, it was like going to explode anyway. But I think, yeah, ultimately for us, it was kind of like we are in a space that we don't totally understand, and I don't know if anyone does, but maybe collectively all these minds can, you know, help us out.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what would be the first thing that would that's going to be created with ASAP Science that you use the funding for? Like what sort of is the new projects that are going to be coming out from you guys?
Yeah, well, like specifically from Idea Boost, a lot of the stuff that they're sort of helping us with in terms of funding is like legal and, you know, should we incorporate and should we trademark our property and stuff like that. So obviously, you know, legal, for example, is pretty expensive.
Yeah,
and so like those sorts of things, like as a YouTuber, I probably never would have done, but having that sort of funding help makes it easier to do that kind of stuff and get the advice, because I wouldn't, like, to be honest, I have never had a lawyer in my life and never known I'd be too scared to do it, to be honest. And so getting a guiding hand through that has been like very, very nice. And then so yeah, like I said, because our project's a bit different than some of the other ones, we don't have like a specific pet project from ASAP Science that's coming out of it, but it's been more, okay, how can we use this money to help launch other things? But it's more of like an overall look of where does ASAP Science need the most help and how can we put money into that aspect of it.
It must be cool though to be able to say like, yeah, I have a lawyer. Like,
yeah, now I'm still scared of it. I'm like, what does that mean? I don't know. Like, hopefully no one sues me.
Well, I hope not. I mean, that again, that's just, it goes to the whole creative thing. Like, you're creating everything yourself, which is even better for YouTube, because it's like you're not having to borrow from someone else or anything like that at all. So that's That's amazing. Now, what was sort of the reason why with A$AP Science you decided to, because you voiced the videos yourself.
Yep.
What was sort of like what, with you and your partner, what is the sort of the duties that you, thank you,
right.
duties, whatever. what are the two things that you guys do to make A$AP Science work?
Right. It started, we were both in Toronto together when we had kind of started it. Mm-hmm. But now he actually is in the UK teaching high school to like teaching science to high school students. Mm-hmm. So primarily now I do all of the production work.
Oh,
before
okay.
we would both kind of share the responsibility and film them together and kind of take turns drawing and things like that.
Right.
And writing scripts together. But now it's mostly myself because he is like so overtaken by his first year of teaching
right, yeah.
in school. So we usually write the scripts together. He manages like all of our translation team. So we have like over 60 people who in 37 different languages who volunteer to translate our videos when
Holy
they go
cow.
Up. Not all of them get translated into that many languages, but right. we have this like team of people who, I mean, the internet's amazing. Honestly, it just
yeah.
goes to show people care about like, you know, having science information out there, but also, you know, they care about their culture and language and wanting to
yeah.
share that around the world. So that's kind of one aspect that he manages. But in terms of the actual show at this point, I run most of that for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now I just saw on your Twitter account that that you were at Google.
Mm-hmm.
Just, what was it, yesterday or the day before?
Yeah, a couple days ago.
Yeah. yeah. So obviously, Google is would be very interested in expanding this a little bit further. So what is it that that... if you don't mind me asking,
right?
what is Google's sort of interest in all of this?
Well, it's a couple of things. So obviously, now that we are sort of becoming a bigger and bigger channel, and it's kind of on this vertical, they've just reached out in terms of, you know, like partner support and making
okay.
sure like if there are things that we need or. Just giving a guiding hand as well. Nothing
mm-hmm.
specific, but IdeaBoost actually had introduced me to somebody from the Google office
oh, cool.
as a chance to sort of ask questions. And then that sort of started that relationship. And so that's why I had been down at the Google office /YouTube in Toronto.
Okay.
So it was nothing specific more than just kind of keeping that relationship. And it's nice to, you know, have people, you know, it's difficult when you, like for most of our life on A$AP Science, we didn't know anyone at YouTube. And it's like when problems happen, it is hard to manage, right? Because
mm-hmm.
you can't really contact anyone. My video is not uploading properly or something's wrong with my channel or it's not monetizing. Like, it's nice to have someone on the inside in a way.
Yeah.
And obviously that's a massive privilege for us because, you know, there's thousands of partners or tens of thousands of partners. And so it's hard for anyone to get that. But yeah, ultimately it's just, I think they see it as an opportunity to help us grow even more. And
mm-hmm.
that's in their best interest, I guess, as well, right? Because
right,
the more
yeah.
traffic that gets driven to their website or their search engines is,
yeah.
is ultimately the best.
Well,
way.
I definitely feel the pain of not the difficulty of access contacting YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think, and I did for like many a month.
Well, one of the things that happened to me, I have no clue why this happened, but my YouTube account got suspended.
Oh, no.
Didn't have any copyright stuff on it. Well, I had one, but I said it, but as soon as I got the copyright, oh, this has possible issues, I put it immediately to private so that
okay. yeah.
no one else would
no
see
issues.
It. And then like a week later, I get an email saying, oh yeah, your account is suspended. And I didn't get an account back for a year.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And when they finally replied back to me and goes, oh yeah, yeah, no, you don't have anything that's any copyright issues or whatever. We found your account is fine. I'm like, gee, thanks.
Oh, okay.
I already kind
yeah.
of created this whole other new account, and, right. and now it's sitting dormant. But
right.
oh, I guess it definitely would be nice to have that sort of like. Mm. Is there a YouTube office that's here in like Canada or Toronto, or is it just a part of? It's just the Google sort of head office.
Yeah, they have. It's the Google head office, but there is people there working at YouTube. I mean, it's
oh,
kind
cool.
of the same thing. So there is like a section in that building where it's like YouTube.
Oh,
and so.
How cool is the building? Because I hear the Google buildings are like
it
amazing.
It was pretty cool. I was lucky enough to get invited down to San Francisco as well to see the
awesome.
YouTube building down there, which was like so epic and so cool and had like a massive slide from floor 2 to floor 1, you know?
Oh, really? That's,
yeah.
That's cool.
And yeah, they're really cool. And even this office in Toronto, I mean, it's more in like an office building, this one. The one
right.
in San Fran, they have like their own warehouse, huge building, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But here, yeah, it was cool. They had like secret passages and stuff.
Seriously?
And like a golf course on the roof. And not
oh,
a golf course, but a mini putt course and
that's
stuff.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and they've got like their own gourmet chef that cooks for everyone at lunch. Man. And yeah, it was pretty. It's a very, very nice environment to work in, and Google definitely takes care of its employees. When I was there, I was like, "Can do you ever like have YouTube in residence? Like people, like can I just work here? Like that would be nice."
That would have been my own question. Right. It's like, how do I get to work here? So that's that is really cool. Now, have you been to the new YouTube like maker space that they have in LA?
No, yeah, I'd love to go. I haven't been to that. I've only seen the videos on the internet, and I know they're going through different workshops and stuff now with different creators and stuff. And I wish I was part of it. I'm not, but maybe one day. Yeah, it would be really. I mean, our setup for production's fairly minimal, so I don't know. We'd have to be really creative in how do we even use the creator space. But maybe one day, I hope to go down there.
That's awesome. So now, for those who are wanting to get into YouTube, because you do have a wide experience, I guess, with us now for using different types of content. What is sort of the advice that you would give to, like, even people like myself that are just like, okay, I want to get it started on YouTube. What would be the things that I would need to do?
Right. It's hard. There's many things that are like logistical you can do, but it depends what you want to get out of it, right? And if, you know, there's different things that will, do you want to get a lot of views and a lot of subscribers, or do you just want to do something you're passionate about? You know, putting my own music on YouTube, I knew that wasn't going to go viral, but I just enjoyed doing it, right? I mean, Zelda the musical I knew could go viral because it was Zelda, but my own personal music was more of like a personal, it would be great if people listened to this, but I know it's not going to get like millions of views. And so just sort of like analyzing yourself in terms of what do you actually want to get out of it? Are you going to vlog your life or every day, you know, who's going to watch that? Who do you expect to watch that? And like trying to understand what you're actually doing. And so ultimately, I think it comes down to sort of the content, and you know, it has to be something you enjoy and not just because you think it'll do well. ASAP Science was a mix. I was like, I think, you know, science content can do really well. I've seen it doing really well with other channels, and I love science and I love production. So it was a nice sort of combination of all the things I had loved in my life. And I write the music for ASAP Science, even though it's mostly the same song, but every now and then we switch up the music and stuff. So it was a nice combination to really bring the things I knew I cared about and would be passionate enough about to like make really good in the way that I saw fit.
Okay.
But yeah, so like it's hard. There is no really one formula other than A is just make content. If you want to have views and you want to have subscribers, you have to make content people want to see, right? And that I could say things like, you know, have a weekly schedule and, you know, have your annotations and have tags and have good thumbnails and stuff. And those things do all matter. But ultimately, if it's crappy stuff that no one wants to watch, or it's maybe not crappy, but it's just there's no motivation for some random person to watch it, it won't get views. But then it goes back to, you know, what do you want out of your video? Is it just, you know, is it a personal diary? Is it a vlog that's mainly for your satisfaction to just kind of put like your thoughts and whatever out there as though a diary would? Or is it actually because you want millions of subscribers? And obviously certain genres do better than others. Like vlogging is a lot harder, I would imagine, to get, you know, millions of subscribers. And I'd say there's only a few YouTubers in the world who have millions of subscribers that are vloggers. Yeah. And they probably started early on and kind of got that edge to kind of keep that audience and grow it. Because it is a lot to invest in someone's everyday life, right? It's interesting, but it's like, and it's a really cool concept, and it's, you know, it speaks to sort of the world that we live in where you can watch literally someone's everyday life.
But that must be tough enough just of and of itself. Like I even with you, you sort of had that experience with the daily vlogs with Apprentice A, like saying that, okay, you know what, every single day there's going to be a video up, like that, people, like the community that are on YouTube, like they can be very rabid. It's like, okay, if there's not a video the next day,
where is it?
And you could start losing viewers that way or subscribers.
And yeah, it's pressure, and it's, you know, editing footage from the day for the day. You know what I mean? Like, it means you don't get a day off if you decide. And I mean, all these things come down to you. You make your own schedule. You could say, I only vlog Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and that's you. And ultimately, I think just be true to yourself. There is a point where you're always kind of like, what do people want from me and what can I do? And I don't want to upset my audience. And I think that might get you more views when you're making stuff for your audience, but it also might make you more unhappy as well, right? And I know some people who do that kind of thing and kind of feel stuck now, you know, now if I do anything that they don't want, then they're going to be mad.
Right.
And so for me, like for personally, I would always kind of be like, it has to be from the edge of like this or the angle that I wanted to do this. And hopefully I see a way that they also want to see it.
Gotcha.
But I would be wary about just doing things because the audience wants you to.
Mm-hmm. So out of all the videos that you've done, what is your favorite, Barn? Like that's the one that's like I like the most.
Right. I like them all. No, it's hard. It's really hard to say. They're all because I don't know all of these things before I go into them, right? Mm-hmm. And especially the ones that people suggest. I just love researching and learning and putting together and trying to, you know, synthesize all these research papers and, you know, take out the language that works for everyone. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the enjoyable process for me. And so,
yep.
Through it all, I'm often learning a lot. Even if it's a topic I knew quite a bit about, you kind of like rebuild up how it works in your head. And that's kind of like the cool end for me, mm-hmm. learning, you know. And I always kind of say like the ones that curse me the most are the ones on productivity and procrastination, because now I've made a video about those things. And whenever I'm procrastinating, I'm like, okay, I'm the person who made a video about procrastinating. And here I am like procrastinating, right? Yeah. So those ones are like, yeah, those ones bug me. And the productivity one, it's like, how come I'm not being more productive when I've like told people how to be productive, right?
Okay.
But yeah, I don't know that I have a favorite, but it's the process for me. It's kind of the back end of like learning it for myself that I enjoy the most.
That's cool. So what for you yourself, Mitchell Moffitt, besides ASAP Science, what is the one thing that you're looking forward to, you want to be able to tackle, that you want to try that you haven't had a chance to yet?
I think more like I have done some music stuff, but I think mm-hmm. that will be a focus of my life at some point. And
okay.
to be honest, yeah, before ASAP Science took off, I was like literally saying, okay, I'm ready. I've had my EP for a couple months now and I want to get out there and start playing shows. And mm-hmm. I'm going to like go at this as a musician because I'm lost in my life and I don't know what I'm doing. And what do I want? And so I was like gung ho and ready to do that and mm-hmm. was kind of starting ASAP Science. And then ASAP Science took off and I was like, hey, this is really fun. And now, you kind of go with the flow. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I've never really had the chance to give it my all in like the music place other than casually. And I'll continue to do that casually and just like for my own satisfaction and fun. Mm-hmm. But it would be, I think, sort of a goal of mine to actually get out there one day and produce it as though it is like my full time job.
Oh, awesome. Now, last question. What is sort of the geekiest thing about you that not anyone would really know? I love asking this question because it's like, you find some really weird things.
So. Right. No, I'm sure there's men that no one would know. I don't know. I'm pretty open about it because I don't have any big secrets. But surely it can't be about Zelda because everyone knows I love Zelda now. I don't actually know. I wish you prepared me for this question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I don't know. What's your answer?
My answer?
Pressure's on, see?
Crap, now I got no way. Because that is a thing. Because it's like everything, especially if you're online, it's sort of everything everyone kind of knows about you can easily be found out.
Exactly, yeah.
I will say probably, I guess, the one thing I am a geek about is finding out behind the scenes of artists and music.
Nice.
And because I am no musician, to say the least. I wish I was. My brother, I mean, out of all the creativity in our family, my brother got the music side of things, where I got like the writing and that side of things. And I've always been fascinated with sort of the musical mind and that. And I just sort of I absorb a lot of anything behind the scenes of any sort of artist. Mm-hmm. I love knowing about, like, E! Behind the Music was amazing.
Right.
And I was like, I love that growing up. Sadly, it's not there anymore. But like anything, like even documentaries like Sound City. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one. It was like I was like, nah, just give it to me. So that's the geekiest thing that maybe not a lot of people know about. Now the table's not. Nah, okay.
No, I mean, like, it depends on what, because geeky, does geeky mean like, you know, oh, I like Star Wars and I like the Matrix? Or if it's with music, like something I do is I listen to the same songs over and over and really rip apart in my brain, like mm-hmm. every single instrument, every single note formation. And that's like an obsession of mine. I don't know if it's like super geeky or not.
No,
but
actually, because that's the thing. Like I describe geek, at least with our podcast is that anything that you're passionate about, mm-hmm. you're a geek about. So like a lot of people would say like, oh, if you're a car nut, well, technically you're a car geek because you're right. so passionate about that. And it's the same with even calling yourself a nerd, although I sort of have there's a negative connotation for that. But still, so by you saying like kind of trying to figure out the musical composition of a song over like and just listen to it over and over again, that's you're just passionate about musical composition. And,
yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah. If that qualifies as geek, then that yeah, qualifies. I'm definitely a music geek and I'm definitely into the sounds and all that. Yeah.
That's awesome. All right. So now, Mitchell, where can we be able to find you and your stuff online?
You can go to YouTube, and it's basically just youtube.com/ASAP Science, ASAP Science. And same with Facebook and Twitter, both ASAP Science. We're on Tumblr. We're on G+, even though I don't really know how to use G+ that well. Don't tell Google. But yeah, you can find us all over the internet, and yeah, they go there and watch.
Where can they find you specifically?
Like my own stuff?
Yeah.
I have my own channel, Mitchell Moffitt. So I have my own Twitter handle, Mitchell Moffitt, and YouTube, Mitchell Moffitt. And I've got my own website, MitchellMoffitt.com, which has all my music and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff up there that people can listen to for free and download for free if they want.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Mitchell. It's a pleasure having you on. I hope to be able to talk to you more in the future. For those of you who want to be able to check out more of This Week in Geek, if you're listening to this for the first time, if you have any questions, comments, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We have a voicemail line, which I don't remember the number to because it was Mike Dodd that set it up, so I'm not going to care about it. But you do send in some voicemails if you want to. You can follow us on Twitter at This Week in Geek, and you can be able to go to listen to all our episodes at thisweekingeek.net. So for This Week in Geek, I'm Steve Snowball Sale. Saying, as always, I remain obediently yours. Bye, everybody.
Want to see me make bubbles with my spit?
Sure do. In fact, that's the theme of our next show. So don't miss it.
What the hell happened to George Lucas?
Oh, my God, there's snot on my face.
And I'm your host, Mike the Birdman Dub, and I'm not a join. Not a join. What the f*** does that mean? That 10 seconds.
No, you gotta keep that.
Let's do this. Let's do this right the first time.
F*** you guys. Ew, it's in my mouth. Oh, God.
Oh, what's it taste like, Mike?
Water. Ew, salty.
Let's start this episode with shat.
Okay, I'm good. Geico.
Holy shit. Oh, my gosh. Freak. Die. Holy crap. Whoa. Whoa, my God, whoa. Where did it go?
I'm like a stupid monkey.
As you can imagine, they don't let us out much.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear, somebody random. I don't know. Maybe even a hot chick. Yeah, let's go with that.
Did anyone ever tell you that you were very, very sexy?
How are you? Actually, no.
They never will.
Check out our website, thisweekingeek.net, for more geek content. As well, subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Send us a Twitter message by @replying to @thisweekingeek. Lastly, you can email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. This extra music was produced by Pronobozo at pronobozo.com. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.